concentration on any other person or any other area causes anxiety. And when I think that I'm the enjoyer and I'm the friend and that I own something, then I get into anxiety. So it's an adjustment of the mind and the heart to focus our attention on Krishna. And this Shriyasha Upanishad helps us do that. So let's hear the English translations, and we'll read them today one by one. So each devotee can take turns passing the microphone along, starting with Shraddha Devi.
The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong.
One may aspire to live for hundreds of years of continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to his way, to this way of way for man. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planet known as the world of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance.
Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place, he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything.
He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entity as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything and never hates anything or any being. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks, in quality one with the Lord, become a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him?
Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unbodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without vance, pure and uncontaminated, a self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Those who engage in the culture of nations, activities, shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those who engage in the culture of so-called knowledge.
The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nisciance. Only one who can learn the process of nisciance and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality.
Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities, who clearly explained it.
One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastime, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men and animals. When one knows this, he surpasses the death and the infernal cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of the God, of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge.
O Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove your effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I.
Let this temporary body be burned to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all that I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins so that there will be no hindrance to my progress.
So, please free me from the reactions to my past sins so there will be no hindrance to my progress. And this hindrance to our progress, we would like to remove that, any hindrance to our progress, because the holy name of Krishna is all-powerful. And our progress in spiritual life and whatever effect we have on others depends on how we take shelter of the holy name. So, Haridas Thakur, in his discussion with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, gave an explanation of how to progress in the chanting of the holy name and how to remove the obstacles. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu often speaks through his devotees. What's another example of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke through one of his devotees besides Haridas Thakur? Okay, we could accept Rupa Goswami. Pardon? Ramananda Roy, yes, definitely. So we'll say Rupa Goswami is described, it is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that just as Lord Brahma in the very beginning of the creation was empowered by Krishna from within his heart to understand transcendental knowledge, similarly, Rupa Goswami was also empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from within the heart to speak on his behalf. Ramananda Roy, very specifically, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met with him, he asked him questions all about Krishna consciousness. And Ramananda Roy said, "My Lord, actually, you're the reservoir of all knowledge. What can I say? Now, if I say something in your service, I'm simply speaking on your behalf." So in the Harinam Chintamani also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks Haridas Thakur many questions about the holy name. And Haridas Thakur says the same thing, that, "O my Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you're speaking through me, so I'll serve you in that way, and I'll speak about the holy name." And the holy name of Krishna is like the sun. And our obstructions to seeing the sun are like clouds and mist. The sun is never covered, actually. From the perspective of the sun, or if you go above the clouds in an airplane, you'll see it's always sunny. But when in my proximity there are clouds and there's mist, I can't see the sun, but my vision of the sun is blocked. So Haridas Thakur explains that these clouds and mists are due to ignorance and due to anartas. Anartas essentially means false values, ideas I've collected, values I've collected within my heart and within my life that actually are contrary to my interests. They don't do me any good. They don't do anyone any good. But nonetheless, I'm attached to them. And essentially, this is due to ignorance. So, the cure to ignorance, of course, is getting knowledge. And very specific knowledge called Sambandha Gyan is what Haridas Thakur says we must begin with in spiritual life. Along with the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we must also receive a steady supply of Sambandha Gyan. What that means is knowledge of our relationship. Sambandha. So our relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also an understanding of our relationship with this world. Who are we? How did we get here? Well, basically, we're born into ignorance. Ajnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya. So, born as if blind. As Satyadev Prabhu said when he was here last time, when we're first born, then some people we don't know, we've not met yet, who we've basically met because of our karma, but it seems random, our so-called parents, they slap a name tag on us. when we come out of the womb, basically we're a living entity wandering the universe, but a group of relatives standing around us says, "Oh, this is Steve," and they put a name tag, and that's who I become. I begin to identify with that family, with that nation, and in ignorance, I misidentify myself as the body and all the things in relationship with the body to be mine. This is a kind of ignorance. So to understand, what is my relationship in this world and my relationship to this world? Is this my home, for instance? We have homeland security in America now. For better or for worse, I don't know which it is. But everyone has an idea that this is my, wherever I am, this is my homeland. But is the material world, is the place we've been born, actually our home? Is it? Is this our home? You sure? It's not our home? Then what are we doing here? And what is this place? Somebody maybe give us an explanation. Be good to know, right?
Like when we go on a travel and our car is parked in some village or somewhere we don't belong to. And we may do some activities there for some time. But it's irrelevant because the destination and the source are different. It's just at that point in time we come across some people and some association, we do some activities. And I could remember that example of the two logs when thrown in the river, they just come together momentarily, just for a moment, and then by the force of the water, they may be taken forever. So it's a very insignificant amount of time.
Thank you. Good night.
We brought ourselves here. We were first in the spiritual world, living a happy life, but then we thought, where else can we go? So then, right when we thought of that, we came down to the material world. So we all started stranded here, so then we have to find a source how to get back to the spiritual world.
Nice.
Of course, we thought, but then as the material world is like a magnet, we're stuck here till we find something which can repel it. So that's how we got here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes. Sunny.
Prabhuji, my question is the living beings, the individual soul is also an eternal being. So it is an eternal moving thing. So is there any particular home we can say it? Because we are eternally moving.
We're eternally conscious living entities, but we're called marginal. Because although our original nature is spiritual. We have minute independence, and we can also live within the material energy or within the spiritual energy. And sometimes, just like on the beach, sometimes there's water, sometimes there's dry land. So similarly, the soul is like that. It can exist in the material world and be covered by matter, or be in the spiritual world. And your question was?
We can we identify there is a home for us? Because
yes.
Like Gandharva Mother, you were saying, like, you are traveling and then you stop in a stop place.
Yeah.
And after a while you have to keep traveling, and or the things flowing in the water, it came together and separate, but it's the eternally it is flowing. So
that disturbing energy that we're living in now, the material energy, is not, is described by Krishna specifically, not our home. That's what I'm trying to get to now. He gives many indications throughout the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, that the material world is a place of suffering from the top planet to the lowest planet. Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avartino arjuna mamupetya tu kaunteya punar janma na vidyate. And once we become reoriented and we leave this material world, punar janma nividyate, we don't have to take birth again in this material world, which is always changing, and which is it really, what is the purpose of the material nature? It's not for our suffering. It's also not for our enjoyment, but it's for our reflection. It's for us to reflect and to come to this ultimate point of inquiry about what is our real home. And once we do that, then we've fulfilled the purpose of the human form of life. And yes, there is a supreme situation, a paramdham, or our supreme homeland. It's the homeland of the heart. That's actually what we all desire, is the place where our relationship is not broken. Here, everyone wants relationship. It's not things that we want here, but we actually want relationships. But those relationships over and over again are disturbed and interrupted. But in the spiritual world, one who has reestablished this relationship with Krishna is never disturbed. That relationship goes on eternally. Actually, we do have an eternal relationship with Krishna.
Not another point, Prabhuji. Maybe we can discuss at some other time, because it never clicked to me when we think of the origin of the soul.
And everyone else. Is that this is not to be comprehended through the intellect. Prabhupada most frequently, when he was asked that question, gave a very simple answer, and that is that the soul has minute independence, and by misuse of independence, somehow or other, we've fallen into the material energy. Our intellect is one of the instruments that we use to measure the material world. And the reason we want to measure it is because we want to control it. And once I can measure it with my mind and my intellect, then I'll say, "Then, okay, now I've got a grasp on it." Can you allow yourself to entertain that there are certain concepts that you can't measure that presently with your intellect, and you can't therefore you can't control them? Let them be uncontrolled. But there is a simple answer, and that is that by misuse of our independence. We don't remember, we can't remember what happened to us last week or last month, practically. What to speak of creations and lifetimes ago. But suffice it to say, for now, that this is not our home. This will be useful to us to understand that we're not in the right place right now. We've wandered off into a place that is inhospitable and is not a place where we can actually live eternally. It'll be all our activities, our lifetimes, our accumulations that will all be interrupted. So this is part of understanding sambandhagyan. It's knowing for sure. Krishna says to Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shruti pratyaksha aniyam That you should use Shruti, Pratyaksha, Aityam. You should use knowledge from the Shastra, you should use your direct perception, and Aityam means what's been passed down through generations of people in society. Anumanam Chatuspadam, and Anuman means logical deduction. These four kinds of things you should use to understand. Pramaneshu avanastana, that this material world is not stable and it's not my home. Vikalpatsa virajite. Virajite means to become detached, and therefore you should become detached from it. So vitaraga bhaya krodha, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there are several things that you should give up in order to move forward on the path of spiritual life. Raga is the first one, and that is attachment to the concept that I can adjust to living here in the material world and that I can enjoy. It's our worldview, actually, that's important in this. What is my worldview? How I look at the world. You can look at the world as a place of enjoyment, or you can look at it as a place of suffering and then renounce it, or you can look at it as a place for dedication, and that's what bhakti is. Material enjoyment, materialist karmis, as we say, those elevationists in any sense of the term means trying to find a way to elevate myself in this material world so that I can be out of danger. Well, that doesn't work, because Krishna says, from the highest planet down to the lowest, they're all temporary and full of misery. So don't try to elevate yourself materially. It won't work. You're elevating more trouble. And shinye punye martya lokam vishante. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, even if you figure out how to elevate yourself properly in this world, you'll use up the credits eventually and you'll fall back down to another situation. You're going around and around. So the other situation is those who conclude that this material world is suffering, temporary, and then they renounce it. And they become completely detached from the world. But that also is a temporary situation, because we have a positive nature. There's a way in which we must engage properly, and that's in dedication. So our worldview is in bhakti is that this world is meant for dedication. Dedicating everything that we have in our realm and whatever we see in the universe for service. That's the perfect worldview. And that's sambandha gyan also. We're in a world that's not our home, but how should we act in this world? Dedication. Dedicate the energies that you have for service. And for serving whom? Krishna. So three things to understand in sambandha gyan. Who is Krishna? And what is my relationship with him? What is this dull universe I'm in? And what is my relationship with it? And what is my nature? My nature is, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. These things are vitally important to understand for my orientation, because that's how I move. We call this, as I said, worldview. Everyone has a worldview. How we look at the world determines how we move in the world. It's our philosophy that moves us forward. If someone's philosophy is that I'm going to enjoy this material world to the fullest extent, their movement in this world, their intention and how they go about things is going to be completely different from someone who thinks this world is meant for dedication. Dedication to service. So somebody again orients us from the very beginning of how to move, why we wake up in the morning, what's our purpose. It's very important. So Thakur Haridas explains this kind of knowledge we must have from the very beginning when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he explains that there are three categories of anartas. Do we have a pen for this board? We do. Do we have a scribe? Can we have a scribe? Who's our scribe? Okay. The obvious choice. First, I want to draw you a little graph that will help in understanding the yoga ladder. And why the chanting of the holy name is specifically very potent. We only have one color probably, right? We have two colors, black and black. Have any color you like as long as it's black. All right, so at the very top, please draw like a half sun that's pointing its a sun, like a half globe, like a globe coming down from the middle top. No, coming, like say if it's descending, so half the globe, 180 degrees. Yeah, but in the middle. In the middle, it's coming from the top. Yeah. Okay, good. And now put some sun rays. Okay, that's good. All right, so in this example, and then you can write within the sun, Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda. So Krishna is the sun, Sat Chit Ananda. And he's got this these qualities of Sat, which means eternality. Chit, which means fully conscious. And Ananda, which means joy. So Sat Chit Ananda. This is the quality of our source. This is where we come from. This is who we emanate from. Now, the sun rays, you can circle one of the small sun rays that is coming. Just circle it. Yeah. So we're like that. So who can give me a verse from the Bhagavad Gita that explains that we're an anga? We're a part of the supreme source, Krishna. You're studying Gita heavily. I'm really impressed. Okay. Mamai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakshastan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. Maybe we can open the door again because maybe the toxic cloud has gone. There's no guarantee in Kali Yuga that some other thing won't come, but we try. So that little, put Anga next to that. So we're a little part of the supreme source, who's Krishna, right? And Krishna is Satchidananda, so what is our quality? We're Satchidananda. It's same quality. Now, right underneath the tip of the bottom sun ray that you see right there, yes, right there, coming down the middle, keep it right centered, right, ignore. So you asked how we come to the material world. Gaudiya gave his explanation. And here's the root cause. We ignore Krishna. Bhayam dvitiya abhinibeshatasya ishad apetasya viparyayo smriti. That's in your shloka book. It's by Kavi Yogendra. And he says, by ignoring our source, by turning away from our original source, then we ourselves become covered over. Okay, so right underneath ignore, write ignorance. Ignorance. What is ignorance? What is the root cause of ignorance? Yes, ignoring. So that's why it's called ignorance. Ignorance means ignorance. We're ignoring somebody. We're ignoring Krishna. That's the root cause. That's the problem. Now right underneath ignorance, right, desire. And right underneath desire, right activity. Okay, so when we ignore our source, then we fall into ignorance. That's an ignorant, put ignorance. And then, because the nature of the soul, as you said, well, you didn't say, you said, we're always moving. Maybe somebody can give me a verse from the Bhagavad Gita that shows that the soul is eternal and that it, and this can be separate verses if you like, and that it's always active. Who can prove from the Bhagavad Gita that the soul is eternal, or you can prove that the soul is always active, or you can prove both? For full credit. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu. Pass him a microphone quick. The faster we pass the microphones, the more time we get. And every second counts.
One verse that the soul is always active is that it's continuously moving from one body to another. It's transmigrating. Would be the verse, Dehino smim yatha dehe kaumaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dirast tatrana muyati, which is chapter 2, text 13. The activity of the soul.
Okay. When I think of that verse, I think of how the soul remains constant and the body's changing all the time. But we'll take it. Go ahead.
I found another one saying that the soul is eternal.
Okay.
It's 2:20. Na jayate mriyate va katachinna yam butva bhavita vanad buyaha. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain.
That proves it. That's proof positive that the soul is eternal. There's a very specific verse about how the soul is active, always active. You got it? Quick, the microphone over there. The faster we pass it, the more time we have.
How about text 24?
Which chapter?
Second chapter of text
224. 24. Let's hear it.
I'll just read the translation. It says, this individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can neither burn nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere. Does that mean it's active because it's present everywhere? Unchangeable?
Not necessarily. But it's a nice verse that proves the steadiness and the eternality of the soul also. He can't be destroyed. He's going to be eternal. Okay, I'll give you the verse. Nahi kashchit shanamapi jatu tishchet yakarmakrit. Karyate hivasha karma sarva prakriti jayar gunai. Na hi kashchit shanamapi. Look it up under the verse index, Hare Krishna. Na hi kashchit shanamapi jatuti. Huh? Na? Yes, na is a separate word. Na hi kashchit shanamapi jatutishchit. You got it? She found it. Okay, go ahead.
It's 3:5 Karma Yoga. Nahi kashchit shanamapi jatu tishthatu tishthatya karma krit karyat hyavasan karmam sarvan prakritya jar gunai. Everybody is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even.
The first sentence of the four-word Prabhupada says the exact sentence that you said. It's not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active.
Okay, so the soul is always active, and he's eternal. And do you want a chair for the times when we're not when writing? Okay, so when the soul ignores Krishna, falls into ignorance, then he continues to desire. And his desires lead him to activity, right? As explained that when we're full of ignorance, we act according to the three modes of material nature. Prakrite kriyamana ni gunai karma ni sarvasha ahankara ityame bina... I'm sorry. Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. This is also in the third chapter. Krishna says that one who's continuing to act but is bewildered by the three modes of material nature goes on with material activities and becomes more and more entangled. And such a person is called vimudha, very foolish. So that our desire and our very nature lead us to activity. So activity means what, actually, in Sanskrit? Or what is the word for activity in, that we would say in Sanskrit? Yeah, karma, right? So karma really means activity. So is our karma, is our activity a problem for us? What's the problem? Somebody describe, give Malini the mic. She'll give us a little exposition on what is the difficulty of karma. What is it like, and how do we become entrapped in karma? What is the psychology of karma, and how does it work?
Activity, when it is performed for our own sense gratification, without any regard to rules and regulations of the scripture, becomes binding to this material world, and that kind of activity also leads us to the hellish kind of existence, which is vikarma. And activity which is performed with the positive attitude according to rules and regulations, but still attached to the results of our activities, even though karma, still it's binding us to this material world. But any activity performed with the intention that Krishna is the supreme, everything belongs to him, and we are just doing it as a service, just taking things from him and giving back to him, that kind of activity is actually liberated.
So what would you call that kind of karma that is dedicated to Krishna?
Akarma.
Or could you also call it karma yoga?
Yeah,
karma. Okay, so Krishna said, yat koroshi yad ashnashi yad johasi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi konteya tat kurushva manarpanam. Ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, do it as a sacrifice for me. Again, sacrifice, I said this earlier, but sacrifice, a related word, or the origin of that word, is sacred in Latin. So when you sacrifice, the ultimate intention is to make something sacred. So karma yoga deals specifically with this problem of activity. I'm engaged in activity, but it's binding me more and more in this material world. I'm caught in a cycle of karma. It goes around and around. So I desire something, and I take it. And then once I take it, I have to take the reaction for it, for taking that thing. Part of the reaction is that I want to take it again. There's an impression that I get in my mind. For instance, if you go for some ice cream, then you enjoy the ice cream, and next time you drive by the ice cream store, you think, I want another ice cream. Where does that desire come from? It comes from the time you had the ice cream before. This is a psychological reaction that goes on. And there are hundreds of thousands of different psychological and subtle reactions that take place through this cycle of karma. It goes over and over again. So I get caught in this kind of activity that I can't get out of, life after life, right? And who is bound by this kind of karma in the material world? Everybody. Yastvindra kopa matavindra mahosa karma bandhana rupa palabhajana matunoti. Lord Brahma says in his Sanghita that everyone from Lord Indra down to the small germ, they're cycling in this kind of karma, right? So to the left of activity, right there, yeah. You can use red, write karma yoga. So karma yoga, as we described, is what deals with this difficulty we've come into as a soul, descended into this material world, and deals with this problem of activity. By dedicating our activities through karma yoga, we become free from the cycle. But still, it doesn't purify the desire. The desire is still there. So what kind of yoga do we have that deals with desire? What is it?
Bhakti yoga.
Well, bhakti yoga is coming at the top, but we're climbing the yoga ladder. But what specifically would you say would align with the idea of desire? Jnana yoga. Because jnana yoga, now I'm analyzing that I'm not my body. It's more philosophical, and I'm understanding that desire is actually making me run after the mirage. So in jnana yoga, I'm dealing with the desire. So you can put Jnana Yoga right next to, right above Karma Yoga. And then above Jnana Yoga, we have what's called Dhyana Yoga, also described in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita as Ashtanga Yoga, but you can put Dhyana Yoga. And Dhyana Yoga is description, as we read in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that we can have some experience of our original nature, Sat-Chit-Ananda. We can see beyond the mind. We can experience to some degree the Paramatma within the heart. And we can experience a little bit of happiness, the Sat-Chit-Ananda, happiness. But still we haven't solved the original problem. We've done it piecemeal, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga. But what the original cause of ignorance is ignoring Krishna. So right next to ignore, put bhakti. So bhakti, actually, the process of bhakti is described in the verse I quoted earlier. Bhayam dvitiya abhinibeshatasya ishad apetasya viparyayut smriti. Tanmayatat buddha abhijit tam bhaktyaika yesham guru devatatma. It means to turn our attention back towards Krishna. And in that verse, bhaktyaika means one-pointedly. We turn our attention back towards Krishna. And in one fell swoop, we solve all the problems because the original problem that of descending into the material world into ignorance, being overcome by desire, and then caught in the cycle of activity, these are all caused by our originally ignoring Krishna. So in bhakti, we actually deal with the root of all these problems because we turn towards Krishna. We turn our attention towards him. Krishna says, very simply in the Bhagavad Gita, what is the cure? Manmana bhavamad bhakto. Repose your mind in me. Think of me. That's it. That's the simple process of bhakti. Now, the reason that a process of chanting Hare Krishna, below activity, to the right a little bit, you can write holy name. Maybe just use the black. And you can draw an arrow from the holy name straight up all the way to Sat-Chit-Ananda. So the holy thing about bhakti also is bhakti can reach down into the lowest. And so the holy name, Bhakti Devi, personification of bhakti, is so generous that she can reach down even below the category of the karma yogi, to people who are vikarmis, who are engaged in activities which are not even regulated, which aren't even human. She can reach that far. And she can take those kinds of persons and bring them immediately to this position of Sat-Chit-Ananda. Because the holy name is described how in the Shastra. Somebody give me a verse that describes how the holy name actually has the same quality as Krishna, and that there's no difference. There's millions to choose from. Just give me one. Okay, we'll take it. Please pass him the microphone as quickly as possible.
One of the verses I like is, O Harinam, all glories to you, sung by all the sages. You are the supreme combination of syllables, and you bring transcendental bliss to everyone. If a person utters you but once, even disrespectfully, still you relieve his many extreme sufferings.
Very nice. Got another one for me? How about Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha? Purna Shod Shudha Nityamukto Binatvam Nama Namino. You can look it up in the Shloka book. It's a famous verse. Nama Chintamani Krishna's. What the verse says is that the name of Krishna, Nama Chintamani, is like Chintamani. It transforms anyone who it touches. So powerful. Chaitanya means what? Life. It means the quality of life. It's alive. So the holy name is not dead. It's not like saying Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. When you say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, it's fully alive, the name. Chaitanya, and what's it alive with? Rasa. What's rasa? Rasa means taste. rasa and vigraha. Form. So all of the taste, all of the form, the transformative quality of Krishna, and it's fully alive. Purna Shuddho means that it's completely pure. And Nitya means it's eternal. Mukto means it's liberated. The holy name is not, it's not subject to the same laws as everyone in this material world under karma. It's the holy name is completely independent. Binatvam nama namino means what? It means that there's no difference, there's no separation between Krishna and his name. The name and the named are the same. This is the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's teaching us that Krishna and his name are non-different. So when you chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, ideally, you should be able to immediately experience Sakchidananda because it's non-different. It's Krishna's name and he himself are not different at all. Full of life, full of rasa, eternal, completely liberated, transformative. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Rasa Vigraha, Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Binadvam Nama Namino. No difference at all, right? So the process of bhakti is the supreme process and the top of the yoga ladder, because it deals very at the source of our difficulty, of what's caused our problem, and immediately by turning our attention towards Krishna, especially as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching in this age of Kali Yuga, Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatiranyata. He emphasizes over and over again for our benefit that concentrate here. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way except for this process of chanting Hare Krishna, chanting the holy names. So why is it, if the holy name has all these qualities, that I don't experience it? I mean, assuming that I don't, huh?
Because of the clouds.
Because of the clouds and mists that block it, block my vision. The holy name is the sun. It's full of all these qualities, but my vision is blocked. Now, what's it blocked by? Let's talk about the divisions of anartas. There's three divisions of anartas that Haridas Thakur explained. One of them in Sanskrit is called Asat Trishna. Trishna, with a T, means thirst. And Asat means... What does sat mean? And asat, so temporary things, I have a thirst for them. Things which are temporary. Asat trishna. Because of ignorance, I develop a thirst for things which are temporary. And because of that, I suffer. There's no happiness in it, actually. Yehi samsparsha bhoga dukha yonai evate adyanta vantakonteya na teshu ramate buddha. Krishna says this to Arjuna, that the kind of pleasure that comes from temporary interaction of the senses and their objects is the cause of the misery of the living entity. That kind of pleasure has a beginning and has an end. And therefore he says, na teshu ramate buddha. The person who's buddha, who's intelligent, actually, doesn't delight in them. He is reserved when it comes to sense enjoyment because he sees that there's no permanent, lasting benefit from that. So asat trishna, this is a result of ignorance. And this is one of the reasons that we're distracted from the holy name, or that our vision of the holy name is covered by this asat trishna, a thirst for temporary things. The second category is called hridaya dorbalya. Hridaya dorbalya. And what does that mean? We talked about it last week. Weakness of the heart. And then the third is called aparadha. What does radha mean? Service. So the name Radharani means the one who's the best servant. So when we talk about Radha, Radha is the best servant of Krishna. Amongst all the Krishna's servants, there's one who is topmost, and that's Radharani, her name derives in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Aradhanam. It means, Radha means the best servant, and performing devotional service in the best way. So Aparadha means doing a service in the wrong way. It's disservice, actually. You're doing a disservice to the Lord. So Aparadhas. So these three things, Asat Trishna, Hridai Dhorbalya, and Aparadha. So there are different categories of Asat Trishna, and they're given like this. Asat Trishna is, we can have attraction or a thirst for material objects. We can have an attraction for happiness in the next life. You don't meet too many people like that. They don't think about the next life. Next life? There is no next life. But I did know. I knew this brahmachari. Actually, he was associated with the Calcutta temple. I lived in Calcutta for a little while. And he used to come there all the time. And he was very dedicated. But someone pulled me aside one day and said, you know, he's not really into bhakti that much. And I said, really? And he goes, he's an elevationist. He's interested in going to the heavenly planets in his next life. And I said, you're kidding me. I never met anybody like that. He was seriously dedicated. He thought he was going to get a beautiful wife and all this. And, you know, so that was his intention. At least he was coming to see Radha Govinda, though, which, you know, probably ruined that whole idea he had. But next life, idea that we'll become elevated in next life. Another is an attraction toward mystic yoga. This means that actually those who can refine their practice of Ashtanga yoga, they can actually develop some powers. And there may be categories like that now, you know, becoming very healthy and empowered in certain ways, that we become attached to the material world. This is all part of Asat Trishna, attraction to fleeting temporary situations here, and also the idea of liberation into Brahman, annihilating our individual existence and becoming free from the inebrieties of the material world. This is also a kind of a temporary situation. Hridaya Dorbalya. Who remembers what are the categories of weakness of heart? Attachment to trifling things that are not related to Krishna. What else? Deceit, which we also categorized along with envy. So deceit. Longing for fame or position. This is a kind of weakness of heart. And also, actually, envy of the progress of others' success. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in his song about this, the qualities of ignorance. He said, when I see others suffering or successful, then I become very unhappy. And when I see others very unhappy or unsuccessful in their activities, I become happy. Oh, good, they failed. This is a kind of a weakness of heart, which is caused by the problem in the material world. And that leaves us with aparadha. And there are four categories of aparadha. One is aparadhas against Krishna. Another is aparadhas against the holy name. Another, what we call seva aparadha, or aparadhas when worshipping the deity. And there are also aparadhas to all kinds of living entities. Oh, excuse me. The category of aparadha to Krishna, that's also seva aparadha. Vaishnava aparadha, seva aparadha, nama aparadha, offenses when we chant the holy name. And then there are offenses to other living entities. Those four kinds of offenses, those are called aparadhas. So these are the kind of do you have a question? This is a kind of seva aparad, dham aparad. There are offenses against the holy dham, like going to the holy dham to conduct business. This is offense to the holy dham. There are lists of offenses against the dham. These are also in the category of seva aparad. So these are the myths and the clouds which cover over our vision of the holy name. So now, there is the power of the holy name itself. And then the sun, even when there's clouds, the rays of the sun can still have their effect, is it not? Last year at Rath Yatra in San Francisco, it was cloudy. But nonetheless, I got sunburned because I didn't wear a hat. And it was completely clouded over, but the rays came through. So this is called Namabhas. And Haridas Thakur is explaining the glories of Namabhas. And that means that even when we're covered with the mist and the ignorance, the clouds and the mist of ignorance and aparads, we can there's a possibility to chant the holy names. And there are three stages of chanting. One stage of chanting is called offensive chanting. Another Prabhupada describes as the clearing stage. And then the topmost stage is called what? Huh? Shudhanam, or the pure name of the Lord. There are different kinds of namabhas. An abhas means the reflected rays, or the rays when you don't see the full sun. In other words, you just see the light, but you don't see the sun itself. Like when the sun is rising in the morning, before you see the sun globe actually come up, you'll see the glowing light, right? So similarly, when we chant the holy names, before we have actual vision and direct experience that the holy name and Krishna are non-different, the light of the holy name will still come through. And it's so powerful that there are different kinds of abhas, the rays of the holy name, which will affect people. And one of them is described as indirect chanting. That is, sometimes people say the holy name, but they say it to mean something else. Can you think of someone like that? Like haram? Yeah, so there's a description of a Muslim being killed by a boar, and he's yelling out, haram, haram, saying the name of Krishna. And so he gets what's called namabhas. He gets liberation because of chanting the name, but he didn't mean to chant the name of God, actually. He's in his language, it means, oh, this is horrible. It's a horrible way to die, but he's saying haram, haram, but he gets liberation because of the effect of namabhas. Who's somebody else who said the name? Ajamil is another example. Ajamil named his son Narayan. And when his son was growing up, actually, by that time, Ajamil was an old man. But he had a deep affection for his son, and he called him constantly. He would say, Narayan, please come and eat. Narayan, please come sit with me. Narayan, come here. And so over and over again, he was saying Narayan. And at the time when he saw the Yamadutas, when Ajamil saw the Yamadutas coming to take him away at the time of death, he also, out of fear, called out for his son. He said, Narayan. He intended to call his son, but he said the name Narayan. But he got the effect of chanting the holy name, even though he meant to indicate his son, not the holy name. Then there are ways in which the holy name may be divided up in different words, and the syllables are still there. Like if you say the word harmony, there's ha and ri, and you said hari, but it's divided, harmani. But somehow or other, you still uttered the holy name. It's there within that. Around India, too, you drive around. I remember my first impressions going there. Everywhere I'd look, there was Namabhas because there was the Krishna motorcycle shop. And I remember in Berkeley, someone started Krishna Copy.
Yes.
I was like, oh, Krishna Copy. That's nice. That happened later in the 80s, I think. Pardon? Krishna Copy is famous. It's in San Francisco. So everyone who looks up sees Krishna Copy. They get this Namabhas. They get the liberating effect of seeing, chanting the holy name. In fact, those who are in knowledge of this effect of the holy name, knowing that it will act, just like fire acts whether you know it or not, right? If you put an iron bar in fire and you leave it in there long enough, it'll heat up, right? Even if you don't know the science of how things heat up, it'll heat up and it'll become fire-like. So similarly, if one's exposed to the holy name, then the effect will be there because the name is like fire. And it lacked the abhas, the effect, the rays are there, the influence of the holy name is there. Yes. Quick microphone because we're losing time.
Even those people who chant haram, by namabhas they get liberated. What kind of liberation is that, Prabhuji?
Well, namabhas can take one all the way up to the edge of Vaikuntha, outside the realm of karma and the material world can take them out that far. But I'll describe, there are different levels of namabhas also and different effects in the power of the namabhas. When Prabhupada explained to us that his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, used to look at articles that were written in the paper about the Gaudiya Math, and or articles that were written by his disciples about the mission. And he would simply count how many times it said, Krishna, Rama, I'd say, this is a good article. And case in point, Srila Prabhupada did the same thing. Once in San Francisco, after a Ratha Yatra, there were two articles that came out in the paper. One was an article about how bad the Hare Krishnas are, and the other was a glowing article about how we need more of these kinds of events in San Francisco. The one that was glowing didn't say Krishna. It just referred indirectly to our society. And the one that lambasted the devotees said Krishna over and over again, practically in every paragraph. And the one Prabhupada picked as being the winner was the lambasting one. So this is good because they chanted Krishna so many times. Prabhupada used to tell us that even if someone would see us out on Sankirtan and they would think, oh, there's that rascal Krishna man, that they would get great benefit because they were thinking Krishna. The namabhas, the effect is there of the holy name. Also, the books themselves that we distribute, they're all powerful because they're names of Krishna in the books. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo yasmin prati shlokam abhadyavatyapi namanyanantasya yashonkitaniyat shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. The Bhagavatam is meant to create a revolution within the heart. It's meant to create a revolution in society. And it does, namanyanantasya, it means the names of, the Bhagavatam is permeated with names of Krishna. So everywhere you look, anywhere you turn, you're going to hear names of Krishna within the Bhagavatam. It's divine. And it has descriptions of Krishna everywhere. So it's liberating. Just by hearing it, one can develop this rasa and relationship with Krishna. So sometimes, especially when we used to distribute books in the airport, in the 70s, when we were young, people thought that we were some kind of crazy cult, and they saw that we were selling books. So there was a class of people that took it as a sport to steal books from us as we were distributing them. So we'd be out distributing, and they'd come up and say, oh, very good, let me see that book, that looks very interesting. Yeah, can I have a look at it? Thank you. And then they'd just walk away with it. So we complained to Srila Prabhupada and said, you know, there are people stealing books all the time from us. And Prabhupada wrote back and he said, lucky thief. And the reason was because they were getting namabhas. Why are they lucky? It's because they could steal any book in the world, but they were stealing this book means they would get the benefit from it. So the Krishna's name and the books, which are the same vibration, are all powerful like that. Now, there are different levels of namabhas, which are explained by Haridas Thakur. At the lower end of namabhas are these indirect utterances of the holy name. Sometimes people say it out of derision also, like Shishupal. When he was making these kinds of noises as an infant, just like Gaur Krishna, he's saying, does he say any words yet? Well, imagine Shishupal when he first started babbling. The first words that came out of his mouth, his parents were listening, and they were blasphemy of Krishna. The first babblings that he uttered just as a little baby, he was saying how Krishna was a rascal and this and that and the other thing. So throughout his life, he was in derision saying the name of Krishna. He got liberation from that. Jarasandha, same thing. These are the lower end of Namabhas. There's an effect there, a powerful effect of chanting the holy name. But at the upper end of Namabhas is called what's called by Haridas Thakur Shraddha Namabhas. And this is the main point I want to make today after going through all these exercises is about Shraddha Namabhas, because it's very encouraging. And Shraddha Namabhas means that even though I'm still covered with some degree of mist or clouds through ignorance and anartas, I have faith that Krishna and his name are non-different, as I've heard from the right source. And therefore, I've developed some faith, some shraddha, that the name is powerful. You all have that because that's why you're doing what you do. That's why you drive all the way over here in the traffic to chant Hare Krishna and be with devotees, because you have this shraddha. So Haridas Thakur says that this upper end of Namabhas is so powerful that even though there are anartas, even though there's still some layer of ignorance, if you chant in Shraddha Namabhas, that you'll definitely come to the perfect stage of chanting. Because the rays themselves will burn off the fog and the ignorance, and they will bring you to the perfectional stage. So he's very encouraging on this point. So this, to me, when I heard this, I understood that it's the mood that we chant in. Even if there are anartas or false values holding us back as we chant, desires, if we continue to chant with faith that Krishna and his name are non-different, and remember that the effect is there, by exposure to the name, by keeping exposed to the name, even if I'm not getting the taste yet entirely, if I continue, I'm getting radiated. Just like the sun on a cloudy day. Last Rathiatra in San Francisco, I got radiated even though I didn't see the sun. I got sunburned from it. And if someone brings some radioactive material into this room, we won't see anything. We won't even feel anything. But we'll become radiated by it. If you turn on a Geiger counter, which counts the amount of radiation that's coming out, you'll hear a little clicking sound. At least that's with the old Geiger counters. I don't know if they have new ones. Probably there's one on my iPhone or something. But you can... yeah, good idea. But you can tell how much radiation is coming. But later on, you'll feel the effect of the radiation. It will radiate you. So what does this have to do with justice? Nisha wants to. Actually, the material world is all about justice. That's why there's laws of karma that are follow very strictly. Krishna has set it up in such a way that everyone gets their just desserts. But bhakti and the holy name, the descent of the holy name into the material world is not about justice. It's a different category altogether. It's about mercy. And so in the face of mercy, we don't call out for justice because you may not want it, actually. If I get full justice for my existence in the material world and all my previous sins and karma, I may not like it. But what Krishna is giving us is mercy, which is divine dispensation. And if I see somebody in line in front of me that I think is unqualified or less qualified than me, don't get envious because, hey, everyone's getting some mercy. Who is qualified? Sometimes people say, well, I'm not qualified, I can't do this. But that's the point. Nobody's qualified. But Krishna's giving special mercy, special dispensation by giving this process of bhakti in the holy name. And because of it, it transcends justice, pulls you to the top of the line. So take the mercy. Forget about justice. Take the mercy. That's what's coming down. And pray for that. Pray for special mercy, which goes beyond justice. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papi mokshayishami masuchah. This is Krishna saying, I'll just transgress all the laws and I'll take you away from all the inebrieties of the material world. Just surrender unto me and I'll give you mercy, special mercy. So how do we get that? That's in the holy name. And the peace that everyone's looking for in the world, Nisha's writing a paper about justice and peace, so I have to include this happily. Peace begins from within the heart. Without inner peace, without having a purity of heart, because the outside world is a manifestation of what we're thinking and experiencing within ourselves. And so the process of creating world peace is being done correctly by those who are chanting Hare Krishna and taking the internal process of purification, because that's what will reflect outwardly. And Krishna gives the peace formula in the Bhagavad Gita, which we discussed earlier. And that is, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shantim Richati. The word shanti means peace. And he says there's three elements to attaining peace. One is understanding that Krishna is the enjoyer. He's the center of all enjoyment. And that he is the owner of everything. We don't own anything. It belongs to Krishna. And that he's the supreme friend. By knowing those three things and acting according to them, we will attain complete peace. So, Namabhas chanting and Shraddha Namabhas chanting is fully effective and will bring us to the highest stage of perfection in bhakti yoga and in chanting the holy name of the Lord. And as we chant also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, through the pen of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we hear about Thakur Haridas explaining how we must also endeavor to avoid the offenses. And then he gives a listing in the Harinam Chintamani of what the 10 offenses are and how to avoid them. So now, reflections, let's have an abbas from you, a reflection about anything that we've discussed so far. Reflection or a question? Yes.
Guruji, I have a question. Like before chanting, one should do a sankalpa. So even though I may, do a sankalpa or, determine myself, but while chanting, something else happens, I want to run with time. So, complete the rounds within time, and sudden that feeling comes. And what happens is that 2 hours of chanting is done. The time for the chanting is there, but this feeling is there that I have to complete within time, and that, makes the chanting faster, and I'm not able to concentrate. And then after 2 hours, I come to know that actually I put in the whole time, but my consciousness was not right because I wanted to run with time. So the time was there, but the mind was trying to run with time.
Yeah.
So even though at the start I one may determine, but while chanting, that sudden feeling comes that
Well, it's the nature of the mind, and this is called psychological time. That you become, and what is psychological time? It means that, for instance, when you're having fun, how does time seem to you? Yeah, it's just like kids playing sometimes outside. Even Krishna was playing with his friends, and Mother Yashoda kept coming and calling him. And he said, okay. And then his friend said, you better not leave now. We're right in the middle of the game. And he said, okay, I'll keep playing. And she'd come back again and say, come on, hurry up. I remember playing as kids, time would just fly by and it would be dark at night and you still want to keep playing. And And it's also in school, you notice that if you're interested in the subject matter, if it's a stimulating, interesting, or maybe, you know, a fight breaks out, you forget all about time. But if the person's just going on and on and on, you know, you keep looking at the clock and you get, you know, it seems like it's much longer. So it's a mental construct, really. And in chanting japa, it has to do with our level of absorption. So what you have to do is become so focused on the name of Krishna and to come to the point of actually being enthralled with hearing the name and the effect of chanting. And when you do, this is good chanting, actually. It means to come to this point where you feel like you don't want to stop. Well, how'd it go by so fast that, you know, I can't stop now, I have to keep going? That's the kind of absorption. And that comes from practice. Practice and detachment. So if you practice that, means you don't have to do anything extra besides concentrate on chanting the holy name and carefully listen. But it's the psychological time within the mind that's making you keep track and then feeling like it's a long time or a short time, things like that. Is that helpful at all? Okay. Aruni had her hand up first.
I liked how in the beginning of the lecture we discussed how we got into this position, I mean, into this material world, life.
Can you explain it for those who just walked in a brief?
I like that it's a systematic knowledge, so it like goes down, but we can go up. Knowing this going down path, we can climb up. So we were ignorant. We ignored Krishna, and this in this way, the mirror of our mind was covered with dust, so of false ego, probably, and we came to this material world, and as a spirit, eternal soul, we became captured in this body with desires and full of activity. But actually, our desires and our activity now is material. And that gives us a chance to purify our activity and our desires and not be ignorant to Krishna and come back to Godhead.
Thank you. We had mentioned karma yoga deals specifically with the realm of activity.
Yes.
And jnana yoga, desire. Jnana yoga, ignorance. But bhakti deals with the very source of all of our weaknesses and difficulties, and that is ignoring Krishna. And it specifically means to turn our attention back to Krishna. Thank you very much. Another reflection.
More of a question.
Okay.
It was to try to understand the meaning of Nama Bas. I thought I heard at the end of discussion of Nama Bas that chanting in Nama Bas would lead to peace, or something to that effect. Is that correct?
It will lead to the perfectional stage of chanting.
But
in Shraddha Nama Bas.
Shraddhana.
Also, yes. I might at this point, this might help clarify, there's another aspect that Haridas Thakur describes to Nama Bas. And the way he explains it is that there are two kinds of light that come from the sun that's not fully present yet. One is the light that's coming through the clouds. And the other kind is that which is reflected or refracted. Just like on the water, sometimes you'll see the light hit the water, but it gets broken or it bounces off in a way that makes it not clear. So what is also categorized as Nama Bas, but actually isn't Nama Bas, it's another kind of chanting, it's actually Nama Paradha, is chanting with the wrong conception. without sambandhagyan. Remember in the beginning we talked about how the perfection of chanting comes first and foremost by receiving sambandhagyan. That means correct understanding of who we are, what our relationship to Krishna is, and what our relationship to the material world is. However, if I become infected with what's called Mayavad philosophy, and that means that I have the wrong understanding of my relationship with Krishna, and that is, I think I am Krishna, and that just by chanting, then this, when this temporary ignorance clears, I'll actually become fully omniscient and omnipotent, just like Krishna. And I will be Krishna. I've just forgotten that I am. I'm him. And then I may chant Hare Krishna. I may say the names of God. But with that motivation, the light becomes refracted, and it's broken. And that kind of chanting, although it's categorized in one place as namabhas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says actually it's not namabhas at all, because you won't get the effect of chanting. In that kind of mentality, chanting the holy names, your desires and your ignorance will increase, and you won't get the effect of the holy name. Therefore, the only thing that which ultimately blocks the holy name permanently is the infection with the Mayavad philosophy. Well, I should say, nothing blocks it permanently, but that is the most distracting, and it takes us in the opposite direction, the Mayavad philosophy, chanting in that way.
But Namabhas is still in the realm of offensive chanting. Would that be correct, that one has to ultimately get away from it to get to inoffensive chanting?
That's correct. Yeah. And therefore, Padma Purana says, nama parada yuktanam naman yeva harantyagam avishrani prayuktani naman yeva harantyagam. That even though one may still be affected by offenses, one should continue to chant. In fact, one should chant continuously, and by that namabhas chanting, one will gradually come to the end of it. He also encourages us to be proactive in avoiding offenses. And by doing that, we'll that much more accelerate our advancement in chanting the holy names by very specifically avoiding offenses. More reflections, yes.
Question, Prabhuji.
Yes.
In spite of understanding so many instructions, if we still chant inattentively or chant with offenses, does, even during the clearing stage, does it still fall under the Shraddha Namabhas, Prabhuji? I mean,
well, first of all, why would you do that?
Because of weakness of heart or many other things.
Touche. Yes, it still falls into the category of Shraddha Namabhas. The only thing that doesn't fall into the category of namabhas, which is namaparad, is mayavad, when one has the wrong conception. Everything else is curable. That's not curable. So if one is weak and is trying to improve somehow or other, then that's taken into consideration by Krishna. Gandharvika and then Ramananda Sakha Prabhu.
So Prabhuji, one thing is about the timeline. So if any process is there, like how we identify in this world, like if I go to a medical school, there are a fixed number of years. Like within 12 years, I finish my high school, like that. So is for the stages of chanting, is there a timeline that if I, after some time, it'll be fine like that?
No, there's no specific timeline. It's mentioned, however, that if one makes offenses and goes on to the degree that we stay in offensive chanting, it'll take a lot longer to fully manifest. So therefore, having sambandha gyan, this is why we chant and we also hear together. You know, when we come together in an assembly of devotees who are honestly endeavoring to make advancement in devotional life, if we have that kind of association, it affects us. And that will improve our chanting. And that will shorten the timeline. Very quickly we become inspired and we're able to chant when we have good association. And when we're hearing transcendental knowledge, sambandha gyan, regularly, it reminds us that that my goal in life, of what my goal in life is, and it helps us to increase. So you can shorten the timeline by doing all the right things. And even if you have a weakness of heart, do what you can to make small adjustments. We talked about this last time, some of the things to improve these weaknesses of heart. Do you remember what some of them were? What are some of the curatives? One of them was the VLCs, or the voluntary life changes. I mean, it's in our will, actually, that why I asked you, well, why would somebody do that? You know, even after hearing so many instructions in the matter, say weakness of heart. But somewhere along the line, if you can take some voluntary life change and decide, I'm going to do this, even if it's a small thing, then you'll get traction and you begin to move forward. Another is association. This is actually one of the secrets of spiritual life. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks about it to Sanatana Goswami when he gives him his instructions. And that he says, really, your advancement comes from your association. Before you come to devotional service, somehow or other, you had some association. And you got some credit because of it. And now, while you're in devotional service, if you can take advantage of good association, then very quickly you can get free advancement. What do I mean by free advancement? Well, let's say you're friends with a multi-billionaire. And you just hang out with him. He'll give you a car and a boat, you know, just like, I don't need this anymore. You want it? Sure, I'll have it. You know, it's like, you know, they have so much, it just falls off them. And you get that, you imbibe it. So pure devotees are like spiritual trillionaires. And they have so much capital, they can just give it to you. So you can get a good start with your own enterprise. They'll give you a loan. So we talked about association. We talked about voluntary life changes. What else? Hearing. Yeah, hearing also is a part of association, regular hearing. And we talked about developing gratitude. How does developing gratitude help us to overcome weakness of heart? Makes you satisfied for what you have, yeah. Satisfied with what you have, and what else? Oh, we have to use the mic because it's being broadcast. Say what you said first.
Being satisfied with what we have, so, and it just makes us grateful for everything we have.
Okay. Aruni, what else?
If we are grateful, we grateful for what we have, we will not long for the position or material things.
Okay. Yes.
It would also overcome envy by being
yes,
grateful.
Yes, that's
to someone.
A big thing, overcoming envy. When you're satisfied in and of yourself and for everything that you have, then you don't envy others for what they have. We're wending our way back to Ramananda Sakha, who had a point and a question. Go ahead, keep the rally going here.
That there's this quotation that I longed for shoes until I saw a man with no legs. So it's something I'm not getting exactly, but it meant that I was craving for shoes. But when I saw a person with no leg, that desire, that craving went away.
Yeah, so nice. Thank you. Sunny, right behind you.
I think with gratitude, you also acknowledge the fact it's not yours. because that means it's coming from somewhere
that's
else.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that's it's your worldview. You understand it's a gift. Everything's a gift. When you have gratitude, you're thinking of everything as a gift rather than bemoaning the fact that you don't have enough. And that's a good point. Nice. Very nice. You had a question or point? One of the fourth thing that we mentioned last week about overcoming weakness of heart was inspirational sadhana. So we didn't just say sadhana, but inspirational sadhana. And it means to arrange your practice in such a way that you get some inspiration. You should get at least a little capful of it every day that you can, you know, some little thing, inspirational. It's got to really affect you. Something that makes you look at the world in a different way, that some experience that's real that you get from your chanting or your reading or your association or the way you're offering to Krishna. And this can come from many different, any of the different activities of devotional service. There's 64 items of devotional service. Like one of them is, one of the 64 items of devotional service is worshipping the Ashvata tree. Worshipping banyan trees is a principle of devotional service. Why? Well, banyan trees are the vibhuti of Krishna. They're one of the opulences of Krishna that he mentions even in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. But in that category, there are other things like worshipping cows. And I can attest to this. I was just in New Vrindavan over the weekend. And when we got a break, we went and we worshipped the cows. And one of the ways that Jiva Goswami specifically says you can worship cows is to scratch them under the neck, because they really like that. So one cow, we were with Madhukari and Nirkula, and I went over and we found these brushes at the Goshal. One of them was a metal brush and the other were like these really strong, hair brushes. So we started brushing one of the cows. She was eating, because that's what cows usually do, practically day and night. And she was eating, and we started brushing her, and Nirkula was in front, and she said, she's got a glazed look on her face, because Nirkula's a massage therapist, said, I've seen it a million times. She stopped eating, and she was like this. And she just, and we for about an hour, we just brushed her. And then all the other cows that were out pasturing, they could tell what was going on, so they all came running over. And there was a bull, actually, and the devotee started brushing the bull, and he fell asleep while we were brushing him. And then Vasilios was there, and then one of the cows stepped on his foot, and we had to go see Prem Vilas, the doctor. He was okay, but... don't have the cow step on your foot. Anyway, I was saying that there are all these practices of devotional service, and just by going to see the cows, it was inspirational, actually, to go and brush the cows and be with the cows. I felt a special inspiration. Part of it was watching one of the cows when she got tired of waiting in line for getting brushed. She started eating the grass, which is really growing long in New Vrindavan because so much rain is coming. And, the cow's tongue is really long. I know that from Karuna Sindhu, because I could hold a piece of gore and she would reach her tongue way out to grab it. And they use that tongue. They can grab a whole clump of grass just in their tongue like that and then pull it up. And you hear this crunching sound as they go along, crunch, crunch, crunch. They just pull the grass out. And I was thinking, the cow, it eats something that's completely useless. Is grass. I mean, what do we use grass for? And turns it into milk. And this is the nature of bhakti. And that is giving. The cow is the emblem of all giving. Taking the most useless thing and turning it into the most valuable thing. You can make ghee, and you can make butter, and you can make milk. All kinds of milk products. They all come from the cow. And all those are necessary for Vedic human civilization. And that all comes from the cow, who just takes grass, stands out in the cold or in the heat and whatever, and then just gives and gives and gives and gives. And in the spiritual world, it's described, what's the description? Goloka. It's all about the cow. And the cow is giving oceans of milk. When does the cow give milk? When she has a calf. because she has so much affection for the calf, she gives milk. And so the spiritual world is overflowing with affection. And Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that it's beyond human reason how we can derive religious principles just by observing and worshiping the cows. But nonetheless, whatever I just said, it was inspirational. And I felt it, and it lifted me up just by doing that one devotional activity. So what I'm saying is, you have to every day have inspirational sadhana. Whatever way you get it, however you get it, get it. And it overcomes weakness of heart because you know for yourself what's what. You actually see it. You feel it. It's direct experience. And someone may say, here, look over here, and say, no thanks, I'm not interested, because you don't have weakness of heart. No more asat trishna. Your thirst for temporary things, it evaporates because you're already full with something else. Ramananda Sakaprabhu. After a 10-minute detour.
My question is regarding Namabhas. After chanting for some time, it can become kind of a routine. Like, because we do it every day, it can become a routine. And we may be mechanically chanting, but the bhakti factor may be missing. So that kind of chanting, is a Namabhas chanting or a Namabrad chanting?
Yeah, let me give you a hint. Oh, the question is it Namabhas?
Or Namabrad.
Yeah, it's a kind of Namabhas chanting. Namaparad mostly refers to Mayavad kind of chanting. Although we call these aparads against the name, not to be attentive and things like that, they're curable because one has faith. If one's chanting with Shraddha Namabhas, they're curable because you're aware of them. Otherwise, you wouldn't even bring it up if you weren't aware of it. You're aware of it, so you're trying to deal with it. As far as routine, yeah, boredom actually is the biggest sin. Why? Because there's nothing to be bored about. It's a kind of ignorance and ignorance. We're actually ignoring Krishna. We're ignoring our source and how once, if we're aware of Krishna, we're not bored. We should do what we can to not become bored. And I'll give you an example. My father, when he was going through college, used to work in a repertory theater. You know what a repertory theater is? They do the same play over and over again. Like, they'll learn a play, like Hamlet, and then they'll come out and they'll do the play. And sometimes they travel and they go from one city to the next, and they do the same play for like a year. Sometimes, if a play is really popular, they'll do it, you know, for like 10 years. Can you imagine? I mean, you're doing the same thing. There was a musical artist when I was growing up in the 60s. His name was Chubby Checker. And he had one hit. It was called The Twist. Rakshit remembers. It was called The Twist. And it became so huge that Chubby Checker, although he was a musical genius, everywhere he went, everyone just wanted to hear The Twist. He got so sick of that song. You know, everyone's, play The Twist. And you're like, no! I don't want to play The Twist. And repertory theater, same thing happens. You know, they come out, they do the same thing every night. And what do you think happens after a while? Boredom sets in and it becomes routine, right? So my father was telling me in the repertory theater, works with the director would pull aside different players and he would tell them to come out on stage with the wrong cue. A cue means, you come out on stage. Well, you're all actors mostly here. You've been in plays. You know that you hear your cue, and then you come out, and then you say the next thing. And there's certain lines and the ways it goes. So he would tell them to purposely say the wrong thing, or come out at the wrong time, or from the wrong angle, from the wrong side. Say, okay, you go out on this side instead of that side. And everyone knew that anything could happen at any time. The play was, they were on guard because, wait a minute. Which side is he going to come from tonight? So you also have to do that with your devotional practice, with your sadhana. Mix it up a little bit. That's why when you have a regular program that you're doing every day, like I've seen in some temple communities, everyone will come out and it's like, here's the morning program. And then, they go through the prayers and they'll recite, the 10 offenses. And, you know, the first offense is blasphemy of devotees to dedicate a large portion, and go through the next one. Oh, Tulsi, beloved of Krishna, I bow before you again and again. No. You know, like, be careful. Look what you're doing. Although you're in a building, yes, you're doing it every day, stop and think. You know, bring a different cue. Do it backwards. Do something. You know, but do it in a way that you become fully conscious of it. You don't have to. It's not. This is kind of a Niyamagraha mentality that, like, well, this is the way it is. You can't do it any different. And if you do, you won't get any benefit from it. No, it's transcendental. Do it in such a way that you can become conscious of what you're doing. And then you'll get the benefit from it. So in your personal sadhana and when you're leading others in sadhana, bring them along. Make it conscious. And this way, you know, you'll get inspirational sadhana rather than a routine that you become bored with. So the mind is a rascal. And it'll fall into this boredom. And you got to slap it around a little bit, you know. Like, wake up, you know, and do something else that'll get the mind engaged and inspired. That's one of the duties of doing sadhana. Yes?
About ritually doing things, I have personally felt like how even if you wake up early in the morning but you do it ritually, then after even prolonged years, it really feels painful because of boredom. And then you really feel like why I should get up early in the morning and all that. And at that time, it's not boredom causes even the relishable devotional service becomes very painful, and then it causes distaste. So,
okay, give us the solution.
That's what I was about to ask you, that you told about the inspirational sadhana. Hmm. So if prolonged practice of even doing things in Mangalarati becomes painful after a prolonged period of time, how is this inspirational sadhana going to help us get the taste back?
Well, just by definition, if it's inspirational, then you'll have a taste. But you're asking for specific techniques or ideas about how to do it. One thing is to travel. Travel a little bit. Go on traveling Sankirtan sometime. Or travel to, go to a festival. Or go to some other place and perform your Mangalartik. Go to somebody else's house, knock on their door. Hey, we're here for Mangalartik. See if they're up. you guys in there? you know, like that helps. Another thing that helps is teaching it to others. If you're bringing others along and you're teaching them, then you start to become aware of what they're doing. And this is one of the reasons that going on Sankirtan is so powerful, is because, like, when we go door to door, we see how the modes of nature are affecting other people. And what we really notice is, like, how they're affecting us also. We see in others what's happening to ourselves. And then we become very aware, like, well, I don't want to be like that. And so when you're assisting others in devotional service, then you watch them. And also another thing is bringing new people to Krishna consciousness and into your midst. Helps you with what's called beginner's mind. Because in any organization, the lifeblood is new people coming in. And what happens is when somebody new comes in and you hear from their perspective of what they're thinking or what their realizations are, then you remember how nice it is to start. And essentially, vicariously, you start over again. And to that end, let's ask Bhakti Brian about his reflections for tonight. Just anything that you heard tonight or experienced that you're taking with you.
Well, I think I would have to say.
I think it's on. Just okay.
I would have to say the diagram up there.
What about it struck you?
What struck me was where Bhakti actually fell into it, because you know coming into this, I'd read heard of Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, but not necessarily in this order, depending upon who presents it to you. But it actually seeing it there, it made so much sense, and it kind of everything kind of fell into place.
Now that wasn't boring. You know, hearing from Brian, who's starting his devotional practice, and hearing his perspective, was that boring? It was exciting, right? So, you know, when you hear in the Association of Devotees, well, I mean, even if they're not new devotees, if you hear an association with advanced devotee means somebody who's interested in devotional service, it's enlivening. I'll give you an example. In Govardhan every year, we sit down in the same room every night, and a group of devotees comes into the room, and the only people that are in the room are people who are really interested in hearing. They can't. Some come a long distance just to sit in that room, and we'll sit in there for 5 hours and hear. And it's, you know, the time goes. I can't believe how fast the time goes by. At the end of 5 hours, I'm thinking, we don't have enough time for this. You know, you'll feel like that. It's inspirational sadhana. And the reason is, I'm in the room with devotees who are out in the field most of the year, teaching Krishna consciousness to others, and they're getting a unique experience, and then they come in and we're speaking from different angles of seeing the philosophy. And sometimes they're heated debates too. And then the time really goes by fast. You know, different devotees, like, they'll bring up a point and they'll say, no, yeah, that's FAS. What are you saying? And it goes by. It's interesting. It's so interesting. And 30 days goes by and I can't believe the time's over. Inspirational sadhana. You can find it. You can get inspirational sadhana. Just organize your life. That's the essence of that verse, Tanama Rupa Charitari Sukirtananu, where Rupa Goswami says, organize your life to be inspired. Get that inspirational sadhana. Learn something new, too. There's all kinds of devotional arts. Learn an instrument. You know, do something different. Go learn madanga. Become an expert madanga player or harmonium player. Or learn some new devotional art. Learn to make sandesh. You probably already know, but for those who don't, you know, make... There's so many things. There's variety in the spiritual world. You can do all these things. Learning to cook, what a great... If you don't know how to do it, learn it. And everything that's entailed... And, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about gardening. In his Sharanagati, he talks about... He's meditating, this glorious meditation about the garden he's going to grow in his yard. And all the different trees, he's naming the different kinds of trees. Why is he doing that? Because he's growing them for the deity. And when I put my garden in my house, I took months to figure out where all the plants were. I got I have camellias from Japan because I was always wondering why such a beautiful flower didn't have any scent. I thought it was a travesty. It's one of the nicest looking flowers, isn't it? But if you walk around the neighborhood, pick those camellias, you'll see there's no scent to them. But I did some research, and I found out in Japan, they have a strain of camellia that's scented naturally. And I got those, and I put them in my yard. But it's for Gornitai. And, you know, and the absorption in gardening and getting plants and things like that was inspirational. Because now, especially now, this time of year, the whole garden's full-blown. And it can pile flowers up on the altar. So bhakti by nature is full of juice and full of nectar. You just got to work it in different ways to try to get the juice out of it. Deepak Prabhu.
Prabhu, on the... So one realization. So, you know, I think day before yesterday, I was just chanting through the... And I was looking through the window. And, you know, there was a squirrel, something...
Oh, a squirrel?
Squirrel, yeah.
One of my gurus.
And so some, you know, the owner used to live there, and probably she used to put some food stuff. And probably they knew it, that, you know, it will... So they were looking around, there were two of it, but couldn't, so Anu saw it, and she threw some food stuff. And while she opened the door to throw it, the squirrels got anxious, and they run in all direction. And, you know, the food was falling. It was actually close to where the bowls were, where they were actually picking it. And they got so anxious, and they ran away. And then Anu closed the door, and they started coming in, and they were touching it, and they were not eating it. So I was just thinking, you know, same as bhakti, You know, sometimes God has good intentions for us, but sometimes when the mercy comes, we are not ready for it. And we get into a lot of anxiety, turmoil. And actually when the mercy comes, you know, we are confused during that time as to what's happening. And then the distractions come and the chain of thoughts is lost.
What a nice analogy. Thank you very much, Deepak. I think Gaura Krishna is ready to lead Artik. We'll have to, maybe somebody can translate for him as he sings. But that's what he's trying to do, right? He's singing. It seems like it. He's really fired up. Yes, Shraddha.
When we talk about chanting, can we sing the round?
Sing your rounds?
Sing the rounds, or is it supposed to be just chanting?
You can make a little tune. There's one devotee in Japan I heard when we were traveling, and she was always, what's all that singing going on? And Satyadeva said, oh yeah, that's how she chants her rounds. A little sing-song going on. Whatever, you know, try it. See what happens.
And I have one more question. Is there a difference between chanting all the rounds together, like 16 that you do, doing all of them together, or breaking them into four? And the reason I'm asking is that I always used to break them because for me it was very difficult to do four together. And so I would have one set of four which was bad, and then another set of four which was bad, and another set of four. So they were all bad. And then one day I sat down and I would sit down for the set of four, and I would realize that, you know, my throat is hurting, I have legs, and, you know, birds are chirping. So all kinds of mind would go everywhere, and that would be repeated for all the four times. But then one day I sat down and I did, like, you know, 12 of them all together, and I realized, like, you know, at the 10th round I had started enjoying it. So was it just, you know, the mind playing tricks there?
No, actually, Savas has very frequently said, he heard from Prabhupada, that if you chant all your rounds in a row, that there, you'll get special potency in chanting. I didn't hear him say that, but Savas says, you know, he heard Prabhupada say that. And I've experienced the same thing. When for the mind, it can be a daunting task. Look at 16 rounds, and the mind's saying, you're kidding me, right? We're going to sit here for this whole thing? But after a while, it gets enchanted, especially the challenge is to really come out of this psychological time we're talking about where the mind's going all around. If you notice that that's what it's doing, and you can actually, the greatest boon and the greatest inspirational sadhana is if you can cross over that point and actually get a taste when you're chanting your 16 rounds. And you have a much better chance of it if you sit down and do it all the way through. And I find the same thing. Sometimes I'll get to 15 and a half, and then it comes. You know, or it could be like in the last bead, but at least something was there, you know, and that's worth everything. That inspirational sadhana, that's what gives us light. It gives that namabhas is so powerful that it gives us correct understanding. It adjusts our senses become pacified. And really our main duty in life is to remain blissful, because we're not good to anybody without being blissful. You think about it. No matter what you do, if you're not blissful about it, it's just routine. So become blissful. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sangasya jayate. And this is the first sign that you're actually getting somewhere, is when you feel some blissfulness, some happiness. That's peace.
To add to Virendra Kumar Prabhu's, I also used to do the same thing. I used to control time. I used to watch it like every second. And then what I started doing was I said, I just surrender to you, Krishna. I don't care how long it takes. I don't care, you know, whether I'll do the set number of rounds that I have set myself to do. And that lifted a big burden from my head. You know, I don't care at all about it.
The way one devotee put it was that one bead's not more important than the other. I think we heard that at a japa retreat. One bead's not more important than the other. And, you know, in the mode of passion, the mind's thinking, hurry up, keep going, where's the next one? It's counting, which is counting. Actually, another meaning of Maya is measuring or counting. But so, you know, in the midst of chanting, you know, if I can just appreciate the one bead that I'm on now and not become, you know, motivated that I have to hurry up and I want to finish, that's a good space for chanting. Rakshit Prabhu?
Yeah. This discussion must say a lot about the quality of chanting. It means we are essentially trying to say the same thing. Gandharika Mataji raised this, how does sadhana not become a ritual and boring? And one can ask the same question about the process of chanting, how it cannot become mechanical. That it says a lot about the quality of chanting that one is doing, in that one would have to treat it in such a serious and important way that this is an activity very important to me, and come to the stage of one-pointed attention on it to feel that type of bliss that you are talking about. That the process itself has to be treated in some solemn fashion, that this is the most important thing for me now, so let me just be calm and attend to it.
Here's your verse. Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavad bhakti yogata. Wait a minute, is that it? Not the verse I wanted. With one-pointed attention. That's what I want. Is that the verse? Tasmad ekena manasad bhagavad sattvatam pati shotavya kirtitavyascha deya pujascha nityada. Tasmad ekena manasa. So, ekena means the mind is one-pointed. Tasmad. Therefore, Krishna says, Krishna's not speaking here, this is Sutta Goswami. Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavan satvatampati. So the mind must become one-pointed. Shotavya kirtitavyascha dhyaya pujascha nityada. These are all the activities of devotional. So one-pointed attention, one must perform these kinds of activities. Yes? You found it. Okay, good. So now we're going to have artik ceremony, which is not just a ritual, actually. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Aham sarvasya pravava, matak sarvam pravartate, iti matva bhajante mam buddhas bhava samanvita, that all the, everything comes from me, everything emanates from me. So what we're doing in the artik ceremony is, out of gratitude, we're offering all the elements back to Krishna. And what are the elements that we're offering? So first we have incense. And incense is like the, Krishna says, punyo ganda prativyam cha. I'm the fragrance of the earth. So we're offering the essence of the earth to Krishna when we're offering him the incense. Then, what do you do next? Then you're offering fire. So there's earth, there's fire that you offer next. So we're offering fire, which is representative of Krishna. Agne naya supatarayasman. It says, oh my Lord, as powerful as fire. We're offering that element to Krishna. Then comes water. So the water element is a remarkable element, actually. 90% of our body is made of water. Water's a flexible element. The more flexible you are, the stronger you are, the more powerful you are. Water is mentioned in the Bhagavatam that a sadhu is like water because you can see it's transparent. You can see to the other side. It reveals other things, and it's purifying. And it also makes a nice sound when it runs. These are all elements of water. So Krishna says, rasoham apsakonteya, that he's the taste of water. And we're offering that element back to Krishna. Then what do we offer? Cloth. And then we have, after that, flower. So the earth, water, fire, air comes like the fan, and then the whisk is like ether. The chamra whisk. What? Oh, and then the bell. the fact they're beautiful, and the conch also. There are prayers throughout the Archanapadati that you say when you, in fact, when you install your puja paraphernalia, there's prayers that you say to the bell when you offer a little artik to the bell before you actually do the artik. But it's saying that the beautiful sound of the bell is actually, you know, that sound is worshipable. It's Krishna says he's the sound in ether, the sound, the conch. And then the chamra is like ethereal. You know, you get the ethereal element in there too. So we're offering everything back to Krishna out of love. So what can we offer to Krishna that he doesn't already have? He has everything. He's the source of everything. But in this so-called ritual, we're offering everything back to Krishna for his pleasure. And therefore, it's like we're saying we're offering everything. We're giving it all back. So that's the ceremony we're performing tonight. And we'll hopefully look at it in a new light. And then we'll have the chanting of the holy name, and then prasadam. Gov Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Bhagavad Gita ki, Shri Namabhas ki.